recorded live.
Hello and welcome to Best Interest of the Family Radio. I'm the producer, Dave Taylor, and always pleased to be joined by co-producer Larry Heron, Coach. How you doing, Larry?
Hey, Dave. I'm well, thank you. How are you tonight?
Well, I'm nursing a little cold, you know, but I think I'm going to be okay. You know, got a little sniffles kind of thing going on, but you know, that's
the
comes
season.
With the weather.
Tis
comes
the season.
With the season. And I'll tell you what, I was just thrilled to have all those kids together in one place on Saturday. We had new board member of Dads and Moms of Michigan, Mike Keller, and his two daughters. They're a delight. And I'll tell you what, we always have to give the long distance travel award to Michael Saxton, who travels down, you know, well over an hour to come and join the meetings and brought his beautiful daughter, the JC, to the meeting. And it you know, we had a bunch of girls there. We had my daughter there, and then we had the one boy who was DJ Heron, who, man, he keeps up with those girls pretty good.
Well, you know, he's starting early, Dave. He's got the harem, and you know, he does, though. He's a very social kid. He doesn't really care as long as there's kids and he's having fun. And they did, in fact, have a great time. It was a great Dads and Moms of Michigan meeting, too. It was quite educational. Tony and Pam Lyle put together a great presentation, and Tony Rosato did a great job presenting. I think everybody was educated, and just a great day. So I want to encourage people to go to the Dads and Moms website, watch for the next presentation. Not sure yet when that will be or what the presentation is. I know that's in the works. I know that for sure. And it's going to be good. It's going to be equally good and continue to be highly educational. So just check that website at Dads and Moms of Michigan. And you'll see when that next meeting is. And, hey, bring the kids because that's truly what we're all about.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we had a whole bunch of them back there trading silly bands and playing Barbies and
hey, wait a minute. My kid was not playing Barbies. I know that my kid wasn't playing Barbies.
I didn't imply. Well, maybe I might have implied that he was playing. Yeah, you know what?
You were playing Barbies?
I won't go there. No, DJ's all boy, I can tell you that. So I'm sure he was. He was probably pulling the arms and legs off of him or something.
I'll tell you what he was doing, and them girls were too, and so were we, Dave. I got to tell you, 52 years old, baby, I still got it. We had a great football game afterwards, didn't we?
It was hilarious. Yeah, those
Mike,
kids, man, they were rocking.
They were having a great time.
Going. And those Keller girls, they were amazing, let me tell you. They were some fast kids.
They were indeed. They were indeed. Those girls were fast, and you... You did okay for an old man, too, there, Taylor.
Yeah,
you were out there.
I still got a couple O.J. Simpson moves in my back pocket. but, hey, you know what's funny is on the board, we got a little message from Michael Saxton. It says, hey, I play with Barbies all the time. Hey, when you have a daughter, that's a license to play
absolutely
with Barbies.
Absolutely. I can tell you that Mike won't admit it, but I'm pretty sure that he gets his fingernails and toenails painted too. So that's what a dad does with his daughter. That's true love right there.
Well, and you saw the message from my mom on the board, right?
Yeah, I do see that. you know, that's what I love about your mom, Dave. She is all honesty.
And she's full of history about me, you know.
She is. That's a mom's job. That's a mom's job to be able to recite history on her children, and your mom certainly has recited quite a bit on you there, Bubba. I'll tell you, there's an encyclopedia worth.
I don't have a memory on this. Apparently my mom does. You know, my memory's not what it used to be. It wasn't all that good then either. But apparently I was the guy that was pulling the arms and legs off of the Barbies. Now, I had two older sisters, you know, Marcia and Linda, and I guarantee you they were, you know, we're a tough bunch. If I pulled the arms and legs off, I'd probably still have a black eye. So.
It's true. Ask the girls. Yeah, my guess is they were maybe trying to pull your arms and legs off of you, Dave.
that's probably closer to the truth. I'll have to ask my mom about that one. Well, when you grew up with a pretty big family, we're talking two older sisters and two younger brothers. So I'm the middle sibling, right?
Absolutely.
Well,
we can.
There's a lot of dynamics going on there, Mr. Mental Health Professional. I'm the middle child out of five, and I'm the oldest son.
There you go.
You know, I've got a lot of issues, Larry. And, you know, and it's a darn good thing that that you're my counselor because, you know, I couldn't afford somebody of your caliber, you know, if I had to pay them.
Well, you know, Dave, you're blessed. You're wedged between two tonight because our guest is got quite a wealth of knowledge as well. And I'm sure that she could probably help you out with the Barbie thing. In fact, I think I'm going to yield to Dr. Armstrong on that one, and she can do some Barbie therapy with you.
Yeah, Barbie therapy. Well, she does specialize in play therapy.
There
and I'm sure
know.
Barbie's come into that. We can ask her about that. Certainly, I have been to her office, and she has an extraordinary therapy room for her children clients. It's amazing. We'll ask her what it contains, okay? Because we've had Pat on before. Pat Armstrong is not new to Biff Radio. We've had Pat on 3, 4, 5 different times on different subjects. He's always fabulous. Always a wealth of information. Has some interesting perspectives that only Pat can bring. And I'll tell you what. With that, welcome to Biff Radio yet again, Pat.
Okay. Well, thank you for having me.
Well, it's our pleasure as usual. Now, tell us about your play therapy room.
Well, play therapy is kind of an ancient art. Began around about 1921, and it's really considered the therapy of choice for children because children's worlds are the world of play, but for children, play is a lot more deep and profound than just play. They actually learn how to deal with their social environments and their outside relationships through the medium of the toys, because whatever's bothering them, they work with the toys, and they master these feelings they have, and then they can move on, and they don't have to deal with them again, not like adults. Because, you know, kids live in the moment. And when the moment's gone, whatever there was gone. And this is how they help themselves actually restore themselves to some kind of a balance. So you have to have a big variety of toys. And the children then make the decision what toys they want to play with, what they want to do, and how they want to use those toys for their own purposes. So you have to have a lot of different things because not all kids are alike. But anyway, it's a magic world, and they really are the magicians.
That's a great analogy, Pat. I like that. That's so true. That's so true.
Well, I've been in her play therapy room, and I can tell you there are puppets in there. There are dress-up outfits in there. There are saws and wood. And an easy bake oven, all kinds of cool stuff, you know.
Instruments.
Yeah, instruments.
Play-Doh,
yeah,
all kinds of stuff.
And board games, and, you know, you name
now
you it, it's in there.
Jealous that you guys don't have a room like that.
I know.
Yeah, that's a little envious. And, Pat, I know that, you know, with HIPAA laws being what they are and everything, that you have a great deal of respect, as you should, for keeping things confidential with your clientele, but could you let our listening audience know what dress up outfits Dave himself has picked?
I knew that was coming. I saw that one coming.
Nah.
I like the Star Wars outfit.
But accommodate him.
I'm your father, Luke. She really does have a Darth Vader outfit. It's hilarious.
That's funny. That's funny.
Yeah, and you know she's got hoppy horses and cowboys and Indians. You name it, and it's in that room. I'm telling you, she's got a puppet theater.
Right.
The kids do not lack a thing in that room. And it's a delight. I can certainly see how that would, would work well with working with children. That's for sure.
Well, no question. Right. The toys are, as you're saying, Pat, the toys are a conduit, if you will, for kids to express their feelings, because kids love to play and explore, and they, I'm sure, feel instant comfort when they get amongst all those toys to then pick up and start expressing themselves through that play.
Right.
And being able to interpret what that child is communicating and feeling through that particular moment is truly a window into a lot of what's going on. And with that in mind, with the dynamic that is tonight's show, in fact, are you still married to your ex?
Right.
What types of issues have you seen children act out through that play therapy in terms of the dynamics that some of their parents are having?
Well, you really don't, you really can't tell that. The child will use the toys in ways that he believes is going to help him figure something out. So you can't really make a direct connection from the child's play to whatever's happening at home, except how he interprets the things that are happening at home.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I mean. Like if for example, he picks up if they pick up a doll and they're playing real nice with it and everything, and then all of a sudden they start beating on it, yelling at it, and I mean, does that kind of tip you that there might be something going on at home or that they've witnessed? Or,
well, not necessarily. It could be his impression of what's going on at home.
Okay.
And how he's, what he's not getting at meeting his needs. So he's going to act out with that baby or that person because that child may be getting more favored or more attention or whatever. But you never really interpret his behavior because he'll hide it. That's what kids do. If they think you're getting inside their world and then you're figuring it out for them, they close down.
Sure.
So it's really his efforts to figure out how to deal with those situations at home. And usually for a lot of children, they once they're able to express that anger and have it opened out, after a certain amount of time, all the loving feelings come out then, all the underneath feelings of what he do. And I can, an example is a little three-year-old comes in, he wants to shoot all the dolls and, and then shoot me, and then he gets to be, then I'm his companion and I have to help shoot all the strangers and everything. And then after all that kind of things and the dinosaurs fight and everything, then he starts making Play-Doh breakfasts or Play-Doh lunches or Play-Doh cookies with me.
Oh.
So you see, in that whole process, which is a process, he goes from this angry kind of situations where he's acting all that out, and then after he gets it all out, then he has all the loving feelings and we're together and the world is better for him.
What age do you start with play therapy, Pat? And
it's good for 3 to 12.
3 to 12, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Very good, very good. So, Pat, tell us, in terms of, are you still married to your ex? In terms of that dynamic, what sort of consequences can that cause to children when parents haven't moved on? And what do parents need to do, actually, in co-parenting? If they've had a troubling marriage, obviously that's why they're getting divorced. What's the wealth of value in being able to let go of some of those dynamics and co-parent in a way that's functional for their children versus holding on to some of those same dynamics and continuing to fight about the same things?
Well, one of the keen examples of that is how one parent continues to provide information to the other parent about what's going on in school, what they're doing in sports, where to go, what to do, how to, what their homework is, what the report card, how to, you know, what the report card says, and what that's kind of really symbolic of the relationship they had when they were together as a couple. She has a role and he has a role to play, and they continue to play those roles even though they're no longer really in those roles.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you get then is that of the same kind of emotional overlay that was that worked when those roles were operating are now continued post-divorce. You know, I gave a talk to the Women's Commission, and the bonds that were together when they were married are broken, and so they're still angry and confused, and because the relationship is no longer what it was, and so they blame each other now, and then they go to court. And court says, oh, thank you for coming, because we're going to do a surgical procedure that will split you apart and you'll be probably cured. But the problem here is that there's no aftercare from a surgical procedure. And so it gets infected and it keeps diseased.
Right.
It's still diseased. So when they're still working on the old patterns, they've not been broken. It's just on the surface it's broken. So when you have these constant kinds of issues with each other, one partner will trigger certain kinds of behaviors in another partner, and the other partners get caught into being triggered, and they respond and react, and so you have high conflict. So
I love that analogy.
What?
I love that analogy that you brought forth with the courts and the diseased matter.
It's really true. And
it is.
People in it they don't believe it. They think they've been freed. But their old patterns continue. But what's difficult for the children then get caught in the patterns.
Sure.
And the children don't have an environment from which they can move on, that they can develop, whatever age they're at. They have to be stuck in this environment that's constantly kind of embroiled one way or another. And it's very hard to get people to actually realize that, you know what, I don't have to be the wife to my husband. My husband needs to step up to the plate and recognize now that we're not a couple. But invariably, I see people in my practice, and even at the moms and dads support group, people come and they talk about how the other partner requires this and that, and they have to do it for the benefit of the children because the children will be left out. But the children are then learning that this is how you deal with relationships. So it keeps going on and on. Now, one of the problems with this is that children get caught in the middle of it. And that's why parents, divorced people need to know that they can be easily triggered into anger by another partner's behaviors. And some of the literature explains what some of those triggers are. And they have three distinct kinds of styles like this. And one of them is, I'm always right, you're always wrong, and maybe I will and maybe I won't behaviors. So when you get caught up in those issues, that one partner is going to behave in a certain way with the other partner that maintains this kind of pattern that they've had all along.
Well, and it's a game on. It seems to me, in my experience and observations, it's the game that's continued after the marriage. The game that, you know what, you will change and do it this way, or you will comply with this or that, or you will treat me like this or that, or you will forgive my mother for that or this, or my dad for this or that. And it's like, well, wait a minute. That's what was going on in the marriage. Why is it going on 5 years later? And quite frankly, as you're saying, Pat, it's going on because they're still having to deal with each other, but now it's going on through the kids, and the kids turn into the trophy to win, and the kids turn into the conduits that they,
right,
that they compete through. And then, of course, it's the kids that are damaged in the process.
That's right. Because they're caught in the middle of it, and they can't. They believe, in a certain age, kids really believe that they have the power to fix it, mm-hmm, and it's not fixable. And so they walk away feeling almost that it's their fault, that they can't fix it. And you'd be surprised how many adults who have been through divorce that continues to have that sense of guilt with them that they weren't able to fix it. So it's kind of an insidious kind of a process that happens, and no one's recognizing that it's limiting a child's developmental growth to the very stages that they need to master so they can move on to a higher level of maturity. Mm-hmm. So, but the problem, the real issue from my perspective, and it's just my opinion, is that there's a general consensus of opinion among professionals that you must be a family. You have to continue being a family. And that defies all the rules or the functions of a family, because these two separate people can no longer provide the functions of a family, which is to promote each other, to teach individuality, to share resources, to teach and enhance the individuals in the family. They can't function as a family separated and totally on opposite courts or opposite camps. It's an impossibility, and unfortunately, it's the general thinking is that once a family, always a family. Well, yeah, once it's a family, but it's a dysfunctional family multiplied. Mm-hmm. So what we're actually promoting is creating dysfunctional families in two separate camps.
So the flip side to that, then, what's recommended in your opinion? What's a better fix to that?
Well, I believe that if each separate unit can function separately, they have a chance to kind of come to their own value systems and use that value system to promote a healthy development.
So your opinion is
that's not the accepted paradigm at this point, you know.
Well,
so,
a lot of the courts, I think it's moving into a better trend, but a lot of the, as you know, a lot of the courts' way is to, as you say, you know, going back, surgically remove this couple. And then one gets all the primary parenting and the other one's turned into a visitor with the thought that, well, you know what, if you guys don't see each other, don't have to deal with one another, there's no conflict and the kids go free. But in fact, what they've done is established and created some deep deep conflict within those kids by creating a serious void by taking one parent out of the mix. And now they've lost a parent, not only to the marriage or to the divorce, I should say, but in their role, because you need more than every other weekend to authenticate a role. But what you're suggesting, if I'm hearing you right, Pat, is that kids are pretty resourceful. They can't negotiate that. They can't negotiate a lack of time, but they can certainly negotiate time with each parent in a different unit, a different family, a different home, equally going back and forth, as long as the relationship is good, as long as it's not contaminated with the other, you know, bad-mouthing the other parent and bad-mouthing the other home and bad-mouthing back and forth.
That's right. And, you know, in Australia, they have relationship centers, I believe, before divorce.
Wow.
And in New York, you are required to be separate. You can't impose one person's ways of doing it on another. So you see, there's some advances being made, but until the paradigm is that what makes a family, and how do you create a family, and then how can you recreate a family after divorce? And the way it is now is that you are required to be a family post-divorce. And so what we require is that these people maintain and continue the very dysfunction that brought them to divorce in the first place.
That is kind of crazy.
Tales.
That's so.
What I hear you saying is kind of like Groundhog Day, the movie.
View of things, but I find them to be very realistic.
I just talk over you, Pat. But are you familiar? You probably are, Larry. Are you familiar with the movie Groundhog's Day with Bill Murray?
A little bit, yeah. I saw that,
anybody that's familiar with the movie Groundhog's Day, it relives the same day over and over and over and over again. You know? And then finally he wakes up, and this is, you know, months later, he wakes up and it's a new day. And that's what we need to do, right, Pat? We need to wake up, have a new day with our relationship with the ex.
That's right.
And we need to quit reliving the same things that were failed in the marriage.
That's right.
And also some things going forward that are failed during the divorce, too.
You have to have a recognition that you do not have to be enmeshed together. you have to be individuals creating this new way of being in divorce.
Sure.
You can't be a couple. You have to be separate individuals who can recreate a new family with the potential for providing all the functions a family should provide.
Well, let's face it. Even in a household where mom and dad are in the same household raising children, there's still different parenting styles. Somebody's phone's going off here. Still different parenting styles, right?
Yeah.
I mean, even though you're in the same household. So doesn't it kind of compound the situation when you're in two separate households and you're trying to parent together? It seems to make sense to me that you just use your own parenting style while you're parenting your kid at your house and don't worry about what the other's parent's style is.
That's true, because then you're recognizing that you're separate.
Right.
You're not going to continue the pattern. You have the opportunity to create a new way of dealing with your child.
Somebody's trying to get a hold of you, Pat.
Yeah, I know.
Well, you know, you're a high-demand PhD, you know, therapist. It doesn't surprise me that your phone's going off in the podcast.
Yeah.
You know?
But you know, the fact of the matter is that, and how ironic, that even married, even in the same household, you still have different parenting styles.
Sure.
Children just experience it under one roof. So why worry about it when you're now in two different homes? I can understand
right.
when
well,
it's...
But you see, though, that you worry about it because you're still connected. The past becomes the present.
Well, that's a separate issue, absolutely. But in terms of parenting styles, you know, kids understand from day one. You know, Dave was just talking earlier about...
Let me help you understand how the past becomes the present, okay?
Mm-hmm.
When they're over at that house... I know how that works. This is what you do. This is how you do that. That's not good for my child. And when you're in the other house, the other one says, well, you're too lax. You don't let them do everything you want, and therefore that's not good for my child.
Mm-hmm.
So they're all of a sudden, they're married again.
Right, right. which is crazy making in and of itself. But when you were in the past and you were married, that same fight was going on. It's
yes.
like, well, you know, you're too much like this with the kids. You're too much
yeah,
like that
right.
for the kids. But the fact of the matter is we know clinically, Pat, and as any kid growing up understands, I mean, even Dave, you know, was talking about coming from a big, huge family in Indiana. And Dave, I'll bet you understood early on as the middle child, as your younger siblings did, as your oldest siblings did, and everybody in between. What they can get from dad and what they can't. What they can
yeah,
get from
right.
mom and what they can't. I mean,
right.
that's something that kids understand from the get start. And they continue to understand that as they go on. Kids, as I'm sure you'll agree, Pat, kids are pretty resourceful. Kids can negotiate as long as it's consistent. Even if you're, you know, a moody SOB that just is always down and blah, blah, blah. But you know what? If it's consistent, kids get it figured out. But if you're moody one day and you're just really consistent the next, and then you're moody again, and then you're just, you know, out there in left field somewhere, and then you come back and you're depressed, that's what kids can't figure out. That's what they can't negotiate because they don't know what to expect. But once kids understand what to expect and there's consistency involved, they get it figured out pretty well.
But they also will experience inconsistency too. And that's a good thing because eventually they will learn to know how to manage inconsistency so they can be consistent. So you see, whatever experience they have to learn how to manage it from their own perspective and how it's going to benefit them or not. So eventually kids need to be exposed. If a family is very easygoing and very flexible and the other family is very structured, the kids have to know each side because eventually they may take what's best from each one and make it their own or just
sure.
one way or the other.
Sure, and it's still the consistency of, okay, this is dad's style, this is mom's style.
Yeah.
And as long as those styles are consistent, they do
yeah.
fine. As long as that house is safe and predictable, whether it's one house, two houses,
yeah.
five houses, as long as they know what to expect in each of those homes, they do fine.
That's right.
Absolutely.
But that can't happen when... One home is very critical of the other home.
Right, right. Takes away from it.
And then the child is, the loyalties have to rise, and children know how to manipulate loyalties by
sure.
telling each one what they want to hear.
Sure. And then what you're building in your child at that point is a disloyal child, is somebody who just spends a childhood kind of
learning how to manipulate.
Exactly, exactly. And again, what does that turn into? Well, you know, we know about personality disorders and you know, as they get older and turn into adults and they continue to manipulate in relationships.
Right, and then they get divorced.
Yep, yeah, exactly. And it starts all over again. No question.
Right.
So, Pat, tell us, in terms of learning to move on, What are some steps that parents really need to take in terms of still co-parenting, but moving forward and out of that dynamic of still continuing to be married to their ex.
Well, the movement is against that, because if you try to establish your own turf, let's call it, or your own little kingdom wherever you are, then the other party doesn't like that or requires other things, then it goes to court and the court wants you to cooperate and work with each other. And oftentimes that's not a workable situation, because you have the old pattern of, as the literature says, one partner thinks I'm always right, or the other partner, another partner will say, well, you're always wrong. And another partner will say, well, maybe I can, and maybe I will, and maybe I won't. Mm-hmm. You have these dynamics working, and they trigger other defensive kind of behaviors, which then make everything chaos. So, as you know from talking with people, Larry, and being a therapist, and the moms and dads groups, people are just very confused because it's a constant chaos. There's really no way to separate this stuff so you can start working on a different path. It's all kind of entwined. I believe that the court believes it's supposed to be entwined because it's a family.
Mm-hmm. But as a couple, or at least an individual, let's say you have an individual that comes and says, you know what, I don't want to be entwined. I don't want this chaos. What can I do individually to untie all that chaos or diffuse it?
What you have to do is say, I have to set up my own home as the best way I know how, and I believe that this is going to be the way to do this, and I can write all this down, and then we'll follow those things, and I will not get involved with the other party. Now, this is what I'm telling you, though. They don't have the freedom to do that.
Mm-hmm.
That would work. That it's... there's some studies to show that works, but that no one has the freedom to do that, because one party will go to court and require the other party to do something different.
Uh-huh.
So the freedom to create that kind of a home separately is not available to you.
Uh-huh.
So you're kind of stuck, because, for example, let's say you want to have your family go to church, okay? And your partner doesn't believe in going to church. I'm making this up. I don't know if this ever happens.
Mm-hmm.
But that partner can go to court and require you not to take that child to court because it bothers him or her. It's against
their religion. You mean not to take him to church? Yeah.
What?
Well,
I mean, I know that's a kind of hypothetical case.
No, happens quite often.
You can't, take it to court. But this is the kind of the background that will, so then you go to court and you're told, well, if that child is disturbed by that, then that's a better thing that you don't do that.
Well, let me use a real-life scenario. But the one that you just described happens quite often, Pat. But usually,
really?
What
I didn't know that. I just picked it up.
I didn't know that either, Dave.
It,
I think that in fact that if you want to take your child to church and the other parent doesn't want you to take your child to church, that in fact during your parenting time, unless you can prove in evidence that your child is disturbed by it, that you can take your child to church. That
sure.
You can, that nobody's going to stop you from doing that.
Well, and that's the thing. If you have weekend, and typically church is on Sunday, some, depends on your religion, but most of the time it's Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have an every other weekend schedule, and that's important to you, I know it's important to Larry, it's important to you to take your son to church, important
absolutely.
To me to have a spiritual foundation, for Rebecca.
Mm-hmm.
And And that doesn't happen just at church, as you well know, Larry. That also happens at home. It happens in the park. It happens in the car. You know,
mm-hmm.
But you have, you know, it's important to us to have that connection with a church body, you know, and to have that network, you know, as a community, you know, in church. So, you know, without turning into the preacher on Biff Radio, you know, that's about that. But I wanted to give a real life scenario, you know, as to what occurs. For example, you know, there are school issues. Now, school issues are a little different than religious issues. And school issues, you know, you may have a situation where the parents disagree about the school that they're going to attend because both parents live in a different, you know, a different town. And they might have shared custody or shared legal, which most do. There's a lot of scenarios that come up like that. And I hear what you're saying, Pat, and I agree with you that creates a situation for the parents where there's some upheaval, and they have to go to a third party for the decisions, and the decision is then out of their hands. And any time that mom and dad can make these decisions together, it's not only better for the kids, but it also puts them in the driver's seat. And I know how absolutely difficult that can be for some moms and dads because there's high conflict. There's
right.
very poor communication going on, right?
Right. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here. I just
okay.
just making my point.
Oh,
I'm a,
you know,
I'm
it's always
a, bad a get to the point kind of guy.
Situations because, you know, you don't have any facts about it or anything. But it's what I was trying to point out, though, is that there's no there have been no ways for these people to work those things out ahead of time.
Sure.
It's all catch-as-catch-can. You have to deal with every nuance that comes up, and it always has an opportunity for conflict. It's
yeah.
not set up where you can state to some degree how you're going to behave in certain situations. And so that doesn't allow the freedom for you to have your own place and have this set up where you know how you're going to handle everything, and then it's negotiated with the other party by a third party member or a mediator or something. But that doesn't happen. It's really, when you get divorced, you are thrown out into a chaotic world.
Well, as you pointed out, people come into these situations, the parents come into these situations, and they're splitting up, and they bring these dynamics with them, and there's never, or I should say, most of the time, there's never a desire on both parties to move forward with their parenting apart. In a better understanding that's what they're going to do.
Yeah, right, right. We don't
you know,
have a setup like that.
No, and there's you know, let's face it, the current, you know, court scenario, you know, where you go in for your early intervention conference, you go sit down with a friend of the court counselor, you know, it's a method they've been using for decades, and you know, while it's informative, they come in, and then what they're basically doing is positioning. And I'm saying the parents are positioning for time with the kid. It's all about how much land can I possess here, you know,
right.
how much of the hill can I take? And it should never be about that. It
right.
you know, if there was a different approach, and you and I have worked on a different approach, certainly. You know, in fact, Pat, you'd be pleased to know that our committee, the Friend of the Courses Advisory, has taken it to a whole new level. We've gotten the involvement of Judge Sosnick now, who's very positively behind the effort due to some work by the mental health professional that took your post when you left, Elise Sophia Finch, and the non-custodial parent representative, Jeff Swanberg. They're doing a splendid job with the model, and as you know, this model is about educating the parents going forward into divorce, you know, and educating them with the aspect that the child is the center, while we have laws out there, of course, we have statutes in the state of Michigan, you know, that it's in the best interest of the child, the best interest of the child factors. Well, this goes much further and much deeper than that, as you well know, Pat. You know, it takes into account, what do you need to move to go forward? You know, you don't have to stay in this failed relationship. You know, you don't have to keep repeating the same failed patterns that got you where you are, right?
Right.
You know, and it's easier said than done. I understand that. You know,
right.
It certainly is, and we're not going to pretend on Biff Radio that this is an easy process. But you have to accept a new mindset. You really do. You have to accept that you can't change the other person. That
right.
You're not going to change the other person.
That's
there's
right.
no need. There's no need to change the other person.
Right.
They're going to be who they are.
But one of the things that the people have to understand, though, is they will be triggered by these old ways of doing
sure.
things, and they have to understand themselves in being part of the trigger, part of the reaction that's being triggered. So what that means is that the ex-partner can behave and act in certain ways that will trigger something in you that requires you to be defensive.
Right.
That's what people have to be aware of their own reactions to being triggered by the partner's behaviors. Because once you can get that under control, that partner can't cause you to have the reaction that they are trying to trigger to happen.
Right.
So, Pat, what do you think the best method is, or methods to resolve those triggers, to work on your own internal controls, at least to not be triggered?
Well, one thing is that the partner needs to practice taking responsibility for their own behaviors with their own child, so that a father, if he wants to know what's going on in school, a father should go to the school, the father should find out from the teachers, the father should know the schedule, the father should request a report card, so the father can deal with it in his own way. But usually what happens, the father goes to the mother, and she's supposed to supply everything. And when she supplies everything, sometimes some things are missing. And then the father will blame her for the missing part, because he did not have any participation in making what he needed to know happen. That's how they intertwine again. So, and then she gets upset with him, and the kid, the child's in the middle. Because it's about him, right?
Yeah, right.
Now mom and dads are mad at each other about him.
Well, you're making some good points, Pat. And, you know, certainly that, you know, school can be an area that you can take control of. You know, as a mom, as a dad, you know, you should be getting the regular email correspondence from
right.
the teacher. You know, you should be looking on the website that has the class information on it. You should be regularly communicating with the teacher and not worrying about what your former spouse is doing.
And guess what you're doing when you're doing that? Being a parent.
Yep. Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
So, you see, if you don't know how to be a parent, you got to learn how. And you got to learn how by maybe reading or going on the internet or acting what the best you know how and finding out what's the
or
best.
Or going to a Dads and Moms of Michigan parenting meeting.
There you go.
Huh? There's a lot of parenting things all over the place.
Really?
Oakland County has a brochure that is probably 15 pages long that tells you all the parenting programs available. Some of them free.
Sure.
So it's out there, but you have to recognize that I don't know how to be a parent, and I got to figure out how, because I'm a single parent now.
And I think, quite frankly, that's a lot of what parents face, and the challenges they face is the overwhelming sense that they feel when they've now become a single parent. And they become resentful and they become frightened. But stepping up for your kids, you know, Dave, is it time to say it? I haven't said it in a long time, but I'm going to say it, Dave. I'm going to say yours and mine together. You know, as Dave always says, Pat, I'm the parent. I'm not going to ask permission to be my daughter's dad. I am. I'm the parent. And as I've always said, you know, even if I don't understand, even if I don't get it, I do know that I love my son so much that I'd walk through hell with a can of gasoline for whatever he needs. And that's the kind of parental commitment you need to start with. And when you do, then when the school tells you, no, we're not going to give you the report card, or when somebody's telling you, no, I'm not going to share that information with you, or I'm not going to be cooperative, or I'm not going to do this or do that, you're not going to walk away. You're not going to cave. You're not going to shrug your shoulders and say, okay, then I'll just go ahead and be resentful. And you're not going to have a fit either. That's correct. You're going to step up, and you're going to be the kind of man or woman of integrity that your children need you to be. And you're going to be consistent, and you're going to step up and be the parent that they need. And you're going to set the kind of examples. Okay, how do I deal with this? You know, if I didn't have a child, I don't know. I might be something different in terms of somebody cutting me off the road. I could see where road rage might come in. But guess what? I do have a child, and I don't want to set that kind of example for him because, you know, he's watching. He's checking it out. And I know the kind of man I want him to grow up to be. And guess where it starts? Who's teaching him? There ain't nobody in this world that can teach my child how to be a man better than his dad. And you know what? That means then that I'm accountable to teaching him how to not only deal with drivers on the road, but how to treat his mom, how to treat women in general, how to treat people, how to go to work every day, how to deal with my emotions, how to deal with friends, how to deal with different things that come up for him, how to coach him, how to be fair, how to be authoritative, and yet how to be fun and goofy at the same time. You know, of different things. And again, all of those, and of course, you know, we're human. Sometimes we don't hit the mark completely, but, you know, as my buddy Bob Fox says, Dave, you don't have to be the best. You don't even have to be great. You just have to be good enough, and you have to be
consistent. Right.
Just be consistent.
And you know what?
I want to encourage all parents to do that.
Dr. Frank Pittman wrote a book about that. It's called Man Enough.
Man Enough. I like it.
And his final conclusion is you're good enough as you are, and if you need more, your children will teach you how to be a good dad.
That is so true. That is so true.
So anyway, I'm getting ready to sign off here.
Well, that's fine, Pat. We sincerely appreciate you coming on and filling us with some of your Armstrong, Pat Armstrong wisdom on these subjects. You know, you've got your own style, and you've got your own way about expressing how we should be raising our children. And we always appreciate your viewpoint.
All right.
Always a pleasure, Pat.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate being on because, you know, it's really important for children that some changes happen for them because they become very disillusioned teenagers.
Yep, and it's certainly hard to break old patterns by the time they've reached teenagers, isn't it?
That's right.
Well, and then it goes beyond that, too, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Goes into the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, and beyond.
That's true. But we'll keep working at it, right?
You betcha.
Got to do something with our time.
Well,
thanks
anyway.
Thanks again, Pat. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks so
all
much.
All right. Good night.
Good night. Well, I'll tell you what, Larry. I always get you can always take a few golden nuggets away when you're talking to Pat. That's for sure.
Oh, no question. That's a lady with experience. You know, Dave, she's had years and years of experience and has seen a lot of different kinds of cases. And she definitely takes her own slant on things and is not afraid to speak out in terms of what she believes. But it's well thought out. It's experienced. And, Pat brings a great deal of wisdom and skill to the table. So it's always a pleasure to have her on. There's always something, like you say, to be learned. And hopefully some of our listening audience has gotten something that they can use from tonight's show. She always brings value to it, no question about it.
Well, and... You were mentioning earlier about how you like to put it, going through hell with a can of gasoline for your kid and never asking permission to be the parent. It reminded me of something that I often say, and this is appropriate for tonight's broadcast, and that's, if you always do what you've always done, you'll always get what you always got.
Hey, that is so true. Dave, you put that, my gosh, that, can you say that again without skipping any words?
No, but I'll save that for another broadcast. But
you're so right, though. That is so right.
It's a problem for tonight's broadcast because you have to break that pattern and you need to move on to parenting alone. You need to move on to parenting yourself. You need to know who you are. You need to know the parent that you are. You need to experiment some. You need, and like you said out, Larry, you know what? Good, bad, or indifferent, your kid's going to love you. Your kid's going to accept you. But just be consistent.
You got to be consistent. It's inconsistency drives kids crazy just the same way it drives adults crazy. But kids are a little bit more vulnerable with that. They're trying to figure it out. At least we try to, rationalize the inconsistency and say, well, it probably comes from this or from that, and we can try to figure out how to make it more consistent. But kids aren't quite that sophisticated yet. They depend on consistency. So when you're inconsistent with your children, they can't deal with that. And quite frankly, that does then create not only voids and resentments in them, but it creates some havoc in your relationship with them. And kids need a strong and consistent relationship with each parent. But when there's inconsistency involved, kids are going to suffer, and so will your relationship with them. So you're right. That's something we can control, too. Of course, when people are trying to rob you of time or an agenda to take you out of the mix, that's a little bit more difficult. But even in that, how you respond to it, that's something that you can choose to be consistent in. You can choose to step up and how you respond to those things in a way that makes sense to your kids. Dave, I get a client and professionally I'm treating them or whatever, and some days it's just, with that very same client, you come back and you say, let me tell you what you need to do. You need to be somebody that your kid can love and understand. That's what it comes down to. Just be somebody that your child can love and understand. And, I didn't learn that in Psych 101. That has nothing to do with clinical aspects of this or that. That has to do with something that our parents and our grandparents would have told us. Be a man, be a woman that people can respect, that people can love and understand. And that's all kids really want in their parents.
Sure. And you pointed out something, and I'll tell you what, if you have to rationalize where you're at as a parent, then you know what? You're probably doing something. And I'm going to go further with that, and I'm just going to say that many times good parents find in these situations because they're fighting for time, as you pointed out.
Right.
And they find that they have to defend their parenting style, or they have to defend something about their time with their kid, because they're going in to see a friend of the court worker, or they're going in to the referee, or they're going in front of the judge. And I'll tell you what, if you're participating properly, all elements of parenting, and you're loving your kid, you're encouraging your kid, there for your kid, you're consistent for your kid, and
your own heart that you're leaving that legacy, that you know that you are strongly bent on making sure, as you pointed out, that child is growing morals and character, and they're going to be trustworthy and understand what honesty means, then you're doing the right things. And my point is, you don't have to defend that.
Nope. The truth will defend itself, and it's reflected in your life and in your walk with your child. It defends itself. It speaks loudly. It shines bright to come back and define the reality of a situation. The truth will come out. And absolutely, that's what it's all about. And at the end of the day, when we start scratching our heads and we're worried about this and worried about that, you know, to me, Dave, that's something good to hold on to. That's something that I take a lot of relief in. That all I got to do is make sure that I'm living the truth, and that I'm leaving that sort of legacy for my child, and they'll figure it out. They'll get it done.
Absolutely. Well, kids are resilient, and kids are a lot smarter than we give them credit for.
Oh my gosh, yes.
At all ages. And like I'll tell anybody, my kid's smarter than her dad. You know what I'm raising her to be. I don't take offense by that in the least. You know, I want her to be stronger, leaner, smarter, richer by far. You know, I want all the things that I've been blessed with in life and more for my kid. So, and I want to make a couple of announcements. We're a couple of future guests that we're going to be coming on here in the next couple of weeks. Ivy Shelton,
wow.
which is an attorney who has been instrumental in parental rights for a number of years, probably closer to a couple decades. And you and I had an opportunity to talk to Ivy just over the weekend, and talked to him yesterday, and he's delighted to come on, and we're going to talk about some legal aspects as it pertains to divorce and parenting and in front of the court and court system.
That should be very interesting. And if anybody is thinking that name might sound a little bit familiar, it could be related to the fact that he was also one of the co-founders of the Dads of Michigan group. And as he noted, it was a great surprise to see him at that last meeting. And as he noted, he was very, very glad to see that the name had been changed to Dads and Moms of Michigan. He said that they'd always, they had started Moms of Michigan to go along with Dads of Michigan, but always intended to merge those two together because it really is a parental effort. It's not about dads, it's not about moms, it's about parents, and that kids need both parents. Ivy gets that, and I'm excited, Dave. That'll be a great show. Looking forward to having Ivy on.
Yeah, I had an opportunity to talk to him at length yesterday, and Ivy is very, very, very strong litigator, and so he'll be a delight to have on the show and talk about some of his legal styles that he's used in court and some of the arguments, some of the experiences that he's had and some of the successes. For example, another very successful attorney that we're having on, who is now newly elected, successfully ran for probate and family court judge in Oakland County, Kathleen Ryan.
No way. We're going to have her on or on the show?
Yep, we're going to have her back on the show.
That'll be phenomenal.
Just got a voicemail from her just today, and I didn't get a chance to talk to her personally. But I know that you and I have certainly, shot across our congratulations. And, I don't remember what the final number was, but it was somewhere around 18, 19,000, close to 20,000 votes, I think, spread. So it was very and very deserved of someone who put so much work into her campaign. But she certainly by far was the most qualified. And we certainly have a huge appreciation for Kathleen Ryan, the newly elected judge in Oakland County, actually believes and practices that children need both parents. What a delight.
She walks the talk, Dave.
She sure does.
She doesn't have a problem. Again, another very confident and not afraid to say what she feels, what she thinks, what she believes. She gets it out there. And you know, I'm excited because I think that it's the Kate Ryans, the Lisa Gorsuchas, the Kathleen McCarthy's, you know, these are very, very strong, confident women that set just such a phenomenal example for girls growing up that question,
sure.
Can I be, can I do it? Can I dream my dreams and really make them come true? These are women that obviously had strong father figures in their life. And they've come up and pursued greatness in their particular fields of choice, but they're trendsetters. They're really creating something better on the benches of the counties that they work in. And might I add one more, Kathleen Viviano. Congratulations to her for winning the bench in Macomb County.
Oh, excellent.
Her dad, Antonio Viviano, of course, was a very long time. I think he may still be on the bench, but I know he's soon to be retired. But now I believe her brother is also been elected judge some couple terms ago. But now Kathleen Viviano has won her race as well. And I do believe that these are people that are going to speed up those trends that we talk about and set a real benchmark, if you will, for others. And so, yeah, really excited about this. And Dave, I'll tell you a little secret. When Kathleen comes on, or I'm sorry, when Kate comes on, call her Kate the Great. I don't know if she told you that story.
No, I haven't heard that one yet.
Kate the
Look
Great. We'll embarrass her. We'll embarrass
sure.
her a little bit with
sure.
that. That'll be fun.
That'll work. Well, let's put out some final kudos too to the gubernatorial race for Pitt.
Oh, absolutely.
Rick Snyder and our good buddy Brian Calley up at the State House, who's now Lieutenant Governor, has supported our share parenting efforts. Put his John Henry on a shared parenting bill, and I just saw something shoot over by email about the new shared parenting bill. So we're rocking, you know. We've got some legislation in place with people like Michael Sexton and Jim Simmerad and Robert Kerr and the like up there with the Dads and Moms PAC. And, you know, I think there's some real positive energy going on right now in our movement.
Absolutely.
You know, and the most important thing, as we do here on Biff Radio, is education. It's about putting the word out there about making it more mainstream that children, bottom line, children need both parents. And it's not a myth. It's not something that Larry and I conjured up. It's just a bare fact that mom brings a special ingredient to the relationship with a child and dad brings a special relationship. And you know what? Mom and dad made the kid. And that kid understands those dynamics from the get-go, that dad has this special ingredient and that mom has this special ingredient, and mom ain't going to be dad and dad ain't going to be mom.
That's fact. That's fact.
But those two special ingredients in the life of this kid and any child is the best gift you can give your kid. And they won't be growing up to be in Pat or Larry Hare in the parent coach's office when they're 25 years old and you know, crying on their couch that something was missing in their life. And if it's already missing, it ain't coming back. So
you can't replace time, Dave.
You can't
replace experiences.
You can't. You cannot do it. You're absolutely right, Larry. And that's what the court system and the friend of the court and other folks, including bitter exes that stand in the way of relationships, need to understand, okay, you know, that children absolutely need both parents. And it's, again, it's the best gift you can give your kid by not standing in the way of the relationship that your former spouse is having with your kids.
Well,
and you'll give them
County,
respect. Give them respect at every turn.
The Oakland County SMILE program says, you know, the greatest gift you can give your child is permission to love the other parent. I couldn't agree with that more. Couldn't agree with it more.
Yeah, it's similar to what you and I often say, you know, love your kid enough to respect the other parent, you know, or the other way that it's often said is, you know, love your kid, or how does it go? You say it a little differently than I do. Love your kid enough to, not to hate the other parent or something.
Love your child more than you despise their
More than you despise your parent. There you go.
Yep.
There you go. Well, with that said, let's wind things up. We got an hour and 10 minutes on the clock, and it was certainly a delight to have Pat on again. Man, I get a big kick out of her. Not only as a therapist, but she's just a great person. I really like her.
Truly is. Yep.
And certainly we'll look forward to the couple of guests that we mentioned and more as we go into pretty close into a new year. You know, we're going to be winding things down going into holiday season. So don't be surprised if we take a little time off around, you know, perhaps the Thanksgiving or Christmas holiday season. But Biff Radio is not going anywhere. We're still going to be producing what we hope you find as, you know, a valuable tool and valuable resource as you raise your children. And God's blessings to you, and we will see you next Tuesday.
Good night.